It's insanity, Greg Wyshynski. It's insane. The level of violence, the level of carnage, the hurtful moves, all the egregious behavior, players running around trying to maim one another, everyone trying to tear each other's heads off. Think of the children. It's insanity on ice. It is bloodlust. What is this, the 1970s? Is this the 75 Stanley Cup? Is this the 74 Stanley Cup? Are the Broad Street Bullies now back in the form of, oh, I don't know, 16, well, not Florida or New Jersey, 14 teams in the NHL playoffs? Out of all of this, Mr. Wyshynski, out of 21 yes. fighting majors and line brawls and cheap shots and Brendan Shanahan polishing up his badge and ink being spilled about how the game is out of control and guys are trying to destroy one another out there, I have one question for you.
Yes.
Who's hurt? Out of all of the players that, you know, have been, you know, there's attempted murder on the ice, blood spilled all over the 200 by 85. Who's hurt? I mean, Kyle Clifford's
now, hurt.
Daniel Alfredson's back. Kyle Clifford is hurt.
Yeah.
Daniel Alfredson's back. Looks like Couturier is okay. Like, if you just read how the game has been described over the weekend, you'll swear this is like the end of Shakespeare's Titus Andronicus, where there's heads rolling all over the stage and blood being splashed onto the audience, and I am king, curtain! And that's, you know, that's how the weekend ended for the NHL. But my question is, who got hurt?
Well, I was going to go with I was going to go with a Gwar concert where there's blood spilling everywhere and bodily fluids spilling out of the audience.
Yeah, Blackie Lawless and Wasp. And I went to a Wasp show too, so I know what I'm talking about.
So, no, your point's taken, but I will play devil's advocate. I will put on my Adam Proto hat here for a second and say, sir, all of this violence, all of this cheap-shottedness, all of this stuff that we're seeing, it's leading towards the catastrophic injuries, don't you think?
Okay, so we're inevitably marching into the Don Sanderson moment, if I can take it to that extreme.
Yes.
Like, that's where this thing is entirely headed. I don't think so. Not at all. And I know I was cheeky about this on Twitter all weekend long. I just wish the narrative that there are no fights in the playoffs would end.
Oh, yes. What a joke. Honestly, let's stop right there and listen. It's Merrick versus Wyshynski, but you know that we're like-minded individuals when it comes to fighting. Can we get a formal apology from all of those dumbasses that sold that line about there's no fighting in the playoffs? There's no rough stuff in the playoffs. It's like Olympic hockey, you see? It's the you boil down to the essentials of the game, and it's like it's artistry out there. It's like poetry on skates. Bullshit. There was more fighting in the last week in the playoffs than there was in the last 5 weeks of the regular season. So I want a formal apology. Apologize to me.
Who? The internet?
All of them.
Yes,
okay. The internet. I want a formal apology from the internet.
I demand an apology from Twitter. Yes, you, Twitter. I want you to apologize to me right now. Hey, listen.
You stupid bird. Open up your beak and apologize, silly bird.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not sure if you've done the stats, but I just sort of scrolled through the game sheets since the playoffs began. 21 fighting majors so far.
Mm-hmm.
21 fighting majors, and this to the myth that the fighting stops in the playoffs because it's much too serious to fight. Quite the opposite happens, folks, in the playoffs. The stakes are higher than ever. The millions of dollars that are on the line, the nerves that are close to the skin. Like, if I told you, Wish, I was having a conversation with someone about this morning. If I told you, Wish, that, you know, today on Puck Daddy, like, you always, you know, you care, you do a good job. God, you stay up late. God, you get up early in the morning. I don't know how you crank out that much content. But if I told you that today, now, starting today, every day, you need to be better than you've ever been before, or your family doesn't eat. You're going to be a little bit cranky. You're going to be, maybe you will yell at an intern. You're going to be a little bit on edge. And that's what happens in the playoffs. That's what happens. And that's why we see things like Chris Letang going pineapple. That's why we see, you know, Sidney Crosby going banana sandwich. That's just what happens. Because the stakes are higher than ever. Now, we're seeing two different things all at the same time. We're seeing fighting and violence as a reflection of frustration, and we're seeing fighting and violence as a reflection of team bonding and team unity. The two different examples, one is the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the other is the Ottawa Senators. And for all those people, I'm always maintaining that, you know, fighting and violence and cheap shots and all that doesn't bring a team together or can't bond a team, can't glue a team together. Look what happened with the Ottawa Senators on Saturday. And it wasn't so much the Matt Carkner going at Brian Boyle because, and even though that was big and that was old school, that was Brian Murray saying, All right, here's what we're going to do here, Mr. McClain. We're going to put a couple of boys in the lineup. We're going to put Zenon Konopka in there. He's going to beat some guys before the game. We're going to put Matt Carkner in there to deal with the guy that just roughed up our Norris Trophy candidate. That's what we're going to do. I loved that moment. I loved Brian Murray.
Paul McClain's like, all right, I got to speak through my mustache. But that's not the way that we did it in Detroit, sir.
Even Detroit did it with Bertuzzi going after Shea Weber. Oh, you would never see Detroit doing that. Oh, really? You would never see Detroit looking for, now, hey, you could have done it on the power play. No, you know the toughest guys were on the weekend? All the fighting and the fisticuffs and the destroying of knuckles aside. You know the toughest guys were that I saw all weekend long? The collection of Ottawa Senators players that killed off that 5-minute major. Like, you can always kill off penalties like that, no matter whether it's, 2 minutes or 5 minutes, because Matt Carkner went and did something for the team. He stood up for the squad. Matt Carkner led the stretch today, by the way, at the Ottawa Senators practice this morning. That's a sign of respect. Matt Carkner's out for a game because of the attack on Brian Boyle. But Matt Carkner led the stretch. Everyone on that Ottawa Senators team was dying to kill that penalty. A lot of guys like, oh, I gotta go kill the penalty. Oh, Gonchar clipped someone. We had a 3-on-2 going, oh man, what the hell is he doing? Oh, now we gotta kill this penalty. Everybody was dying to kill that penalty on Saturday night. Those were the toughest guys I saw a weekend long. Yep. That collection of penalty killers.
That happens, and then Alfredson goes out on the Hagelin hit, and they wind up winning the game. And that's a statement.
And who gets the goal?
Don't happen to that game.
Who gets the
Chris
goal?
Chris Neal.
Bing, 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 bing. Bing, 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 bing. This was a wonderful weekend for fans of old school hockey. But you know what? It's not old school hockey. It's still new school hockey. You know what it is? It's just hockey. You don't like it, that's cool. If you don't like salt and vinegar on your fries, that's fine. That doesn't mean the fries need to disappear.
Tim B, by the way, says the internet apologizes to me. So thank you, Tim. Thank you for speaking on behalf of the internet. You're right, Merrick, because if you go back to like 1998 was the year that I was looking at, where I believe there was a line brawl involving, I think it was maybe the Penguins and the Sabres, or the Flyers and the Sabres. No, it was the Flyers and the Sabres is who it was, right? If you think back to other pro seasons that have had their ample portions of chaos, you wonder what life would be like if these things occurred in a player safety culture and a media culture that we have in 2012. My problem is this. I think the fact that Twitter has now become such an essential part of the hockey fan experience, and going into that echo chamber every night when games are on and seeing the outrage culture that we're all in on every single hit and every single play and every single dive and every single miss called has created this thing where now stuff that we see in the regular season is put on anabolic steroids and gets pumped up beyond belief in the postseason. And I will give you the best example. Carkner. Mm. The Carkner attack on Brian Boyle essentially was this. Going after a guy, an unwilling participant, after a clean hit in the regular season. Now, the difference, of course, being is that what Boyle did wasn't clean. He rabbit punched Eric Karlsson in the face. Eric Karlsson weighs about 70 pounds, happens to be the best player on the Senators. So Carkner asked Boyle to dance in game two. Boyle refused. Carkner goes over, gets his retribution. How many times in the regular season do we see a guy flip his gloves, skate over, and start pounding on some MF-er after a clean hit? And how many times in the regular season have we read somebody, heard somebody, seen somebody throw their hands in the air in outrage and say, that man should be banned for the remainder of the playoffs? It never happens. But yet, because it's the playoffs, and also because Ranger fans felt the need to equivocate that with the Hagelin hit, which was a legit suspension, Carkner gets the extra game on top of the game misconduct. Now, I think what he did was beyond the pale. I mean, he jumped the guy, punched him twice in the face, and continued to punch him while he was down. There's no question there should have been at least something from the league. But for the people to say that one game wasn't enough, for the people to say that it should be like five games, you're out of your minds. And you're being hypocrites because you weren't saying the same shit in the regular season.
And you didn't complain when Wojtek Volski didn't get suspended earlier on this season when he hit Daniel Alfredson in the Rangers zone, to which I point at the press release that came out from New York Rangers saying they were perplexed at the inconsistencies in the call so far. I don't recall a press release coming out like that when Wojtek Volski got the free pass for hitting Alfredson earlier on in the season. Look, the Carkner thing to me should have gone like this. Okay, Brian Boyle roughs up Eric Karlsson in game one. I understand that. I understand why the Rangers would want to do that. I understand why the Rangers would want to try to scare this guy, considering how much intimidation is still very much part of the sport. But once you open that door and you step into that room, you know there will be some gorillas that say, you shouldn't do that, you know, because if you do, some bad things are going to happen. Like, the entire day, like leading up to Saturday, don't you think that in the back of Brian Boyle's head, He knows someone's coming. He knows there's going to be payback. You read the game sheet. Okay, Karkner and Knopka are in. I wonder what could happen. Okay, I'm putting on my skates.
The
I wonder
draw,
what's
no less. Yeah.
Well, and again with the opening the opening lineups too. I thought it was going to be fireworks off the draw. But if you're Brian Boyle, see, you know, and listen, Dean Brown brought up this point on Twitter, and I think it was a great one too. There's a difference between not defending yourself and being defenseless, right? This wasn't as if Matt Karkner came up behind Brian Boyle and attacked him. This wasn't a sneak attack. This wasn't one of those, I didn't see him coming. A, Karkner challenged him on the faceoff. Boyle said no. He got in his face again along the boards. This is a face-to-face confrontation with Brian Boyle. Again, Boyle declines. Karkner said, all right, I got to do what I got to do because this is a great moment, a great bonding moment for our team. This is a come-together moment for the Ottawa Senators. And he did it.
Now,
but there, don't try to sell me. Don't ever try to sell me that Brian Boyle was defenseless. This isn't, I'm reaching for a puck and someone suckers me from the side. Okay. This isn't trailing back checker catches me with a glancing blow off my chin. There was nothing about defenseless for Brian Boyle. He chose not to defend himself. There's a huge difference between the two.
And also keep in mind that sucker punches by and large don't get suspended. Players don't get suspended in the NHL. I mean, especially in the playoffs. Let's not forget about that, too. Now, here's the thing. Boyle's, Karkner would have been suspended for more than one game had Boyle been injured. That was said pretty much, that was the message pretty much given by Brendan Shanahan on WFAN in New York today, where he addressed the Karkner thing, the Hagelin thing, and the Shea Weber thing, revealing, by the way, that he wanted to give Shea Weber a one-game suspension. But the mitigating circumstance here, Jeff Merrick, was the fact that Henrik Zetterberg, per GM Ken Holland, was not injured on the play. So, Weber gets fined because Zetterberg's not injured. Karkner gets a game because Boyle's not injured. And also because most of the punches, according to Shanahan, were to the shoulder and to the arm and and not to the head. Carl Hagelin gets three games, which if you do the old equation for regular season versus playoff games, would be a six-game suspension in the regular season. Now, if you go back and look at what elbows gotcha in the regular season, there were three where there were five-game suspensions for a blatant elbow against a player of some renown. Keep that in mind as well. We're talking about a caste system here. So when you take out Daniel Alfredson, captain, all-around nice guy, Lady Bing candidate, all-star hero, you're going to get something. And if it had been in the regular season, Hagelin would have gotten five. He got basically six on this one. But again, the thing is, and this is our question of the day as well, Alfredson had a concussion in that game. Miraculously, he's healed. We'll probably play in game three. But he had a concussion in that game. And based on that information, Carl Hagelin got three games. So the question of the day is, what are your thoughts about a suspension culture in the National Hockey League based on severity of injury? Because that's where we're at. The two mitigating factors right now in the postseason are who got hit and how bad is he hurt. And in that one, Alfredson got hit. He's a star. How bad is he hurt? He got knocked out of a playoff game. And that's why Carl Hagelin's sitting for three.
Do you think it was too much? Do you think three games is too much for Carl Hagelin? A lot of people did.
You see, this is the I was on the Slate podcast this morning, and they asked me something about this, and I really feel like we're having two different arguments here as hockey fans. We're arguing about the bigger picture as to whether the system is broken, whether there needs to be harsher punishments, whether there needs to be bigger fines, maybe you fix that in the CBA, whether, you know, what Hagelin did or what Karkner did should be more than 3-1 games respectively. Now that's an argument for another day. We are at the end of the first season of Shanahan and the Department of Player Safety and their regime, okay? So what you have to do is you have to play by the precedents, by the rules that were previously set. If you go and give Karkner 20 games now, what does it mean? What have you done? You've undermined the entire season of trying to build cases against guys, set examples, that kind of thing. You can hit the reset button next season maybe, but for now you have to play by the standards that were set. And according to the standards that were set, if you intentionally elbow a guy in the head, which Hagelin did, he took a run at him. So, okay, that's an elbow, right? If you do that, you run the risk of getting a 5-game suspension if there's a concussion on the play and if you hit a star player. He did both. So I don't understand why Ranger fans are crying.
See, I think the injury definitely needs to come into the conversation and needs to factor in some way when it comes down to suspending. But man, that is a dangerous and slippery slope to go down, once you choose to go down it. And the case that I'll always cite is Chris Simon and Ryan Holwig, which got, what did I get him? 20 games? Wish? Or 25 games? For the cross check to the face.
Did he get to 25 games for the skate stomp? Was that the longer of the two?
That was after. Yeah, that was after.
Yeah. Okay.
The stomp was secondary, but you know, Ryan Holwig missed what, one shift. Right? So,
yeah,
and
that's,
you know,
funny.
And there was no injury. So do you say to yourself, well, mitigating factor, he's not injured. If he was injured, we're going to call it a 20 game suspension, but really he wasn't injured, so he's going to get one. Like, what's more egregious, the act or the effect? I think you have to take a combination of both into consideration. How that affects the matrix of your decision, that's for a taller forehead.
Hey,
than
this
me.
This is from Four Scott Stevens on Twitter. Simon got 25 for Holloway and 30 for the skate stuff.
Ah,
that's right. I knew the second was a longer one. This is going to dovetail into our discussion after the intro about the Penguins and Flyers specifically. By the way, Denny Potvin will join us. Elliot Friedman will join us in the podcast today to talk all about this fun stuff. The most fascinating decision that will come down from the National Hockey League, maybe by the time you hear this, will be the James Neal suspensions. Ashamby figure is going to get the book thrown at him. It's an in-person hearing. They're going to make an example of him. Cross-check to the throat after, I mean, it was a dicey hit by Braden Schenn on Martin, but I didn't think he left his skates too early. I thought it was within the hit that
fine.
He left his skates. It was okay.
It was fine.
And then Asham comes over and goes batshit. So he should get his. Andrew Shaw, the goalie play on Smith. Maybe we'll talk about that later on in the show. I think it's a effing farce. But the James Neal stuff is significant for one reason, which is that Couturier, I don't believe, is injured. Giroux escaped injury, but Neal ran around like Charlie Manson at the end of that Penguins game, headhunting. And this is going to be the great decision for the Department of Player Safety, because I'm an intent guy. I say you punish the guys that clearly are trying to injure their fellow man. Injuries be damned. And this is intent. This is Neal running around trying to take out a significant player for his opponents. And if the NHL lets this one slide, then I will grab a torch and join the chorus, okay? Because this guy is the thing that you should be trying to get out of these playoffs, a guy who's looking for it. He's looking for it.
I don't know that he was Charlie Manson, because I don't think that Charlie actually killed anyone in the two egregious incidents from 1969.
I didn't realize we had a Manson apologist on the podcast.
He was more like Squeaky Frome, okay? Let's just call him Squeaky from now on. Who actually had blood on the hands, okay?
All right.
Yeah, I'm putting Vincent Bugliosi on you all of a sudden.
All right. With that, let's start the show proper and hit this Philly Penguins game, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sabine is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Penguins Flyers Game 3 drew significant ratings for NBC here in the States, and I believe also up in Canada the ratings were
quite
strong.
But why?
Well, I imagine it was because of the magistry and the poetry on the ice and not any of the rough stuff. Now, there's so much to get to in this game, I don't even know where to start, so we'll start here.
Crosby.
No.
You really don't start with Crosby?
As much as I want the internet to apologize to me, I want something more. And I wrote about
what
it on Puck Daddy earlier, and other people are saying it. By no means is this some sort of a revolutionary thought considering the circumstances. Mario Lemieux needs to apologize to the National Hockey League for speaking out about that Islander stuff, for calling it a sideshow, for calling it a carnival, for saying it's a detriment to hockey, it's a travesty, it's not hockey, I'm going to take my puck and go home. Sir, your team was the New York Islanders against the Philadelphia Flyers in Game 3.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. You're not going to hear anything about take my ball and go home and this is a garbage league. You're not going to hear any of that. I need to reconsider my position in this game. Yeah, you're not going to. And you know what? A lot of the criticism levied at the Pittsburgh Penguins since that infamous letter that was penned by Mario Lemieux in the Penguins organization. I think a lot of the criticism that's been leveled at them and, you know, the finger of hypocrisy that wags at the Pittsburgh Penguins is all because of that. Like, I can remember specifically, we were coming home from Hockey Day in Canada in Whitehorse when it came out. We're reading this on our Blackberries. We're saying to ourselves, you know, it's one thing for players to lip off, and yeah, everyone gets caught up in you know, the hypocrisy of, you know, my guys would never do this, but when your guys do it, there's always an explanation for it. But when it's one of the owners that comes out and blasts an organization for this, knowing how the Pittsburgh Penguins aren't exactly a squeaky clean team, how they've always had sluggers on their squads, and how they've always sort of walked the line of saltiness in the NHL. And like that, the minute that letter came out, you open yourselves up to egregious criticism. And right now, I think it's completely legitimate. If Mario Lemieux wants to wag his finger at the New York Islanders for what happened a couple of seasons ago, then, you know, turn that finger and point at yourself today, Mario, because that was your Penguins.
They tried to grab the moral high ground with that letter. And in some ways, I think Sid in his comments, to go to Sid, because I know you want to talk about Sid. I think Sid in his comments tried to do the same thing. Like, he smiled through these snarky statements about the Flyers, how we're not the only guys doing it, how it's the Flyers as well, and everything else. And come on. The Penguins in that game unraveled. They unraveled. And they unraveled mm-hmm. for two reasons. One, to get some petty comeuppance against some of the guys on the Flyers, Shen, Couturier, Giroux, most notably, and also because they wanted to change the conversation from the fact that they are one game from the brink and Marc-Andre Fleury is a sieve. And listen, it pisses the shit out of me that Marc-Andre Fleury is a sieve, because we were both in this podcast last week calling him a money goalie. I was on the Bill yeah. Simmons podcast last week calling him a money goalie. I was on Yahoo Video calling him a money goalie. Mm. Well, you know what? He's not. He's a turnstile. He is a welcome mat for rubber in this series, and it's an embarrassment to watch it happen.
I think someone else should take your spot on the Bill Simmons podcast. That's all I'm saying.
Anyhow. They don't allow Canadians.
Oh, damn it! Damn it! I'm pooched again. You know what I think? And we'll get into this with Denny Potvin at the bottom of the hour. Because Denny first brought this point up after Game 2 on Hockey Central on Friday. He said, you know, we're watching the game, and he said, you know what, Jeff? Sidney Crosby's out of shape. Like, Sidney Crosby comes out of the gate, scores a goal in the first minute. Hey, look at Sidney Crosby! But then he sort of vanishes in periods 2 and 3. And Denny's point was, and I agree with him on this, you know, it's tough to miss that much hockey and come back and play at that level. And I think what we're seeing with Sidney Crosby now is a disconnect between the body and the brain. The brain knows what to do. For Sidney Crosby, the brain has done this a million different times. The body is saying, I'm not there yet. You know, I've missed too many games this year. I'm not in that shape. I don't have that timing anymore right now. You know, I'm going to need another summer of rehab. I'm going to need training camp. I'm going to need to play a lot more games than I played this year because I'm not there. And I think that's part of the frustration we're seeing with Sidney Crosby. Sure, it's a frustration that his team is getting spanked by the Philadelphia Flyers. Right? Sure, there's that embarrassment as well. 3-0? You're down 3-0 to the Flyers? What? Everyone's picking you to win the Stanley Cup. But I think part of it is internal for Sidney Crosby as well. Because he can't do the things that he knows he can do because his body isn't there.
But he's also seeing a significant number of breakdowns in every facet of this lineup, too. And he can't
totally.
Do anything about it. I mean, the
totally.
Defense has been bad.
Defense has been awful.
Fleury was bad. Malkin doesn't have a goal, and he's a -4, I think it is. The Flyers have done a hell of a job against the Malkin line, no question. They've done a good job containing Sid, no question. Late in the game, these guys are non-factors. But the bottom line is that I think that the frustration for Crosby, like you said, it's internal, but it's also external. It's also seeing his team fall apart around him, the city crumbling at his feet as he watches the Philadelphia Flyers, whom he despises, skate to a 3-0 lead. The crazy thing about this series I think we all underestimated how damn good the Flyers were up front. Defensively, I still think they're susceptible, and in goal, I mean, Ilya Bryzgalov should be penning a sonnet in honor of Marc-Andre Fleury's feeble performance, or else he'd be
on
the spotlight.
Hang on. The Letang save in Game 2, that would have made it, what, 3-0? That would have, like, crushed the Philadelphia Flyers? Like, in some ways, this is going to sound weird, but stick with me on this one. In some ways, Ilya Bryzgalov in these playoffs reminds me a lot of two goaltenders, Jerry Cheevers and Grant Fuhr. Sure, he'll let in 4 goals, 5 goals, sometimes 6 goals, but he won't allow the one that breaks your back. And that was always a calling card for Grant Fuhr. And I know it's only, you know, 3-game snapshot here of Bryzgalov, but Don't you get that Grant Fuhr feeling right now with Ilya Brizgalov?
No.
That he's not going to let that one in that's going to totally kill you? Because he hasn't. He made a big save in game one that would have put the Pittsburgh Penguins up three by 3 pucks. And then again, the Letang save in game two was the one that salted it away for me. He's not allowing the one that destroys the Flyers.
If you give up an early lead to the Boston Bruins or the New York Rangers, do you think they're going to be as accommodating as Marc-Andre Fleury has been? Because that's the real issue.
Mm-hmm.
I know we could do the whole thing. He makes a big save when he needs to. But
I said
on,
it's a three.
If Fleury's been a sieve, then Brizgalov has at least been, fetty netting.
It's. Oh my. I'm saying it's only a 3-game snapshot. I'm saying absolutely. And against a team that could tighten up and drill down a lot more, sure, that may be death. But right now, that's how I'm feeling about Brizgalov. He's Grant Fuhr for 3 games. Who knows? He may turn into Roman Chechmanek the rest of the playoffs. Who the heck knows? But right now, I'm seeing Grant Fuhr.
Do you think? And I ask this honestly, just to dial it back to the whole game three experience with these two teams.
Mm-hmm.
Was this good for hockey to have the entire conversation in the first 3 games of the playoffs be about the Penguins and the Flyers hating each other and about who's going to get suspended? Wheel of Justice bullshit.
You know what's worse? You know what's worse, Wish, is seeing guys that don't care, seeing guys that quit, seeing guys that, you know, lead into the stereotype, and we see this in other sports, and occasionally we see this in hockey, guys that are rich and just mail it in, you know, the myth that, oh, this guy's loaded, he doesn't care, oh, it's the playoffs, they're not getting paid, so they don't care. I think that would be worse. I think watching a team roll over and play dead is worse. I think a team quitting midway through a series, because it's too damn hard to play against these guys, I think that's worse. So I think that is bad for hockey. I don't think what we're seeing between the Philadelphia Flyers and the Pittsburgh Penguins is bad for hockey. And again, you brought the example of Batman, right? Bring a little chaos into your life for the Joker and Batman anyhow. You know, there's another one that goes, you know, stick around long enough and, you know, you'll become the heel. I'm paraphrasing. You'll become the bad guy.
My Batman comparison to the Penguin series was it's almost as if Batman took out a 12 gauge and decided to blow away the Joker. It's become what he hates the most. Alright, so to reset the playoffs here, the Penguins 3-up on the Cap, on the Penguins. The Capitals 1-1 with the Bruins game 3 tonight.
Holtby.
Capitals fans.
How is Holtby not a star in that game too? How does Holtby, I'm not like a big stickler for the 3 stars, it doesn't like offend me personally, but how does Holtby not get a star in that game?
Holtby's outplayed Thomas in the first 2 games.
I know! He totally has.
Going into Boston and winning those games is pretty impressive. But, you know, in fairness though, the Boston top line hasn't gotten going yet. I suppose we'll have to see what happens there in game 3. But they're 1-1 going into game 3. Rangers and Senators, as previously mentioned, 1-1 going into game 3 as well. The Devils and Panthers 1-1 after the Devils played them off the ice in the third period last night. It wasn't even close, and it just killed me as a Devils fan to see what that team can do when it's plugged in and locked in, and they were meandering in the first 2 periods of that game.
To me, remember I just talked about, you know, the lack of effort and just don't care? That was the New Jersey Devils I saw in the first period yesterday.
Yeah.
That I think is bad for hockey. Because then when they turn it on, I mean, that third period, like boom, boom, back to back, holy smokes, that's the New Jersey Devils.
That was the New Jersey Devils playing the Florida Panthers on a Tuesday night in Newark in the first 2 periods, and that was the New Jersey Devils playing the Philadelphia Flyers on a Saturday night in the third period. That's exactly what you saw. Predators 2-1 over the Wings. Again, you talk about the Panthers hung on for dear life in that third period, but so did the Nashville Predators in that third period against the Detroit Red Wings, who just turned it on, and full marks to Pekka Rinne and that team for pulling out the win, because Detroit was on it in the third period of that game.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, I couldn't help but thinking as I'm watching this and the Nashville Predators take a 2-1 lead. I'm not going to write off the Detroit Red Wings yet, but if the Detroit Red Wings bow out in the opening round this year, not that they're done, like not that they're finished being a good team, but at what point do you say, you know, their shot at winning the Stanley Cup is officially done?
You don't, as
a collection. You don't?
You don't. Because they've got a shit ton of cap space. And they've got an organization people want to play for. An organization people want to play for that's probably close enough to Minnesota to attract certain free agents that may or may not leave from New Jersey.
I heard he's going to Carolina now. That's the latest. That's the latest Parisi rumor du jour.
The St. Louis Blues and the San Jose Sharks tied 1-1. That series got real nasty at the end of game 2
with a bunch of brawls and Saboka breaking up, Dominic Moore's nose. Statement game from the Blues, though, in that game two. The Sharks showed the Blues, hey, we're the veteran guys. We can win a playoff game in game one. The Blues showed the Sharks, oh, by the way, we're the best defensive team in hockey history, and decided to win that game. I feel better about my Blues pick after seeing that they could stack up a game like that against the Sharks. But again, I remain with eraser in hand, ready to go either way on this, depending on how the series goes. Blackhawks and Coyotes 1-1 in that series based on a clutch performance by Chicago in game two, tying the game late, winning it in overtime. Really, really ballsy. A necessary victory. We haven't talked about it yet. Andrew Shaw running into Mike Smith. Smith goes down, stays down for upwards of 10 minutes. Shaw kicked out of the game, hearing on Monday. Sir, your thoughts on this egregious and terrible act on behalf of that rookie?
Why didn't Mike Smith have to go to the quiet room?
I can. That's the
to your point.
All of the questions that I have about this postseason. The Canucks sucking. Why Smith was allowed to stay in that game is the single biggest mystery to me of this playoff.
He's grabbing his head. He's rolling around like we saw Andrew Shaw's shoulder hit his head as Smith is playing the puck behind the net. He's grabbing his head. He's rolling around. Oh my God, my head, my. How does he stay in the game? How does the quote-unquote protocol not kick in at that moment?
Yeah. Stays in the game, plays well in the game. We haven't heard about an injury after the fact. In fact, Smith, I think, said after the game he was feeling 100%. That was embarrassing. If he sold it, and I think he sold it, it's embarrassing. And I like Mike Smith. We talked about Smith being a competitor, being a guy who can play that Sean Burke style of hockey, be all kind of rough and stuff. But selling that, and especially on a player where Shaw wasn't trying to target him or anything, it's just I don't know.
I thought he was trying to get around him.
He was trying to protect the boards for the harder round. Absolutely, but yeah. I get the charging. You got to protect the goalies. They're not fair game outside the creases. The notion of this being susceptible to supplemental discipline is just a joke. It's just a joke.
Yeah, I don't think it should, and I hope that it won't result in a suspension for Andrew Shaw.
And finally, the series that we haven't talked about, but we shall later on, and because it's just incredible. So do you see this Kings Vancouver series as I do, Jeff Merrick? Do you see it as Jonathan Quick being the goaltender we all thought he could be and stealing a series, and conversely, the Vancouver Canucks being offensively clueless without Daniel Sedin in the lineup?
I just don't see a team in Vancouver. I see really good players. I just don't know that I see a team. I want to get more into the Vancouver Canucks. And yes, we're going to talk about Ryan Kessler and the diving and you know, what do the Vancouver Canucks do next? Who do they go with? Roberto Luongo, the $10 million goaltender, or do they alienate him further and go with Corey Schneider, who was exceptional last night? But let us bring on our first guest of the afternoon, shall we? He is a four-time Stanley Cup champion. He's a Hockey Hall of Fame member. He's a proud former member of the Ottawa 67s, and he is an analyst on Sportsnet. He is Denny Potvin. He joins us now. Denny, how are you, sir?
Hey, Jeff. Well, I'm feeling great.
Excellent. Boy. And, you know...
Rowdy.
rowdy. You know what, Denny? So much of the playoffs this year specifically, man, kind of has an old school vibe about it. It has like a, you know, that Islanders dynasty era sort of vibe about it where, you know, you do things to stick up for your teammates. You do things to make yourself a team. The adversity revealing character, the adversity building character, just with a wide brush here, with a roller, but not a brush here. Denny, characterize the playoffs that have been the first week so far to you.
Well, I must say that they have been like none other that I've ever seen. And I just don't recall. I mean, excuse me, but, you know, we had some tough battles back in the 70s and the 80s, and I'm one of the few guys that was, you know, right in the middle of it. And I don't recall the viciousness. I mean, that is really what is scary, the absolute viciousness of the activities. You know, I don't ever recall a Weber type incident. I don't remember Shaw type. Well, yeah, I guess I do. But I mean, you know, there's a viciousness here in this game that may have been perpetuated. Here's something I don't think I've really seen before by the coaches. I mean, what Laviolette, I think, did in the beginning of the series was, well, maybe proved to be brilliant now, but really goading the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think, and that may be one of the reasons why things have turned out the way they are, and obviously in favor of the Flyers.
That's interesting, Denny. You know, the other thing I think a lot of people point at, rightly or wrongly, is the NHL itself and the supplemental discipline system. You know, if they had come down and suspended Shea Weber for what he did against Henrik Zetterberg, maybe a message is sent of some in some way, shape, or form. Do you think that there needs to be a responsibility on the NHL's behalf for developing this culture of viciousness, as you call it?
Yes, I think I do. I'm a little bit torn because I like to take both sides and try and sort of see how it fits. And I'm thinking, what if the NHL actually went out and said, okay, all of you pundits out there, you've been telling us how you just want us to let them play. Well, here is what you've got. We have let the guys play, and look at where it's gotten us. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point the league would come out with that kind of a statement and say, we are reeling this in so tight that it's going to start to feel pretty uncomfortable for everybody. It's kind of like you have to take, it's almost like I said last night, it's almost like you got to postpone the playoffs for 3 days and everybody's got to show up in the principal's office. it's gotten so out of hand that there almost needs to be something, catastrophic to happen to make it, to make people aware of the fact that even the best of hockey fans, I don't think, want to see what we've been watching over the weekend.
So I'll take a timeout, go to the corner.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Take a deep breath.
Hat on.
what did you make then of the Ottawa response, the physical response that Ottawa brought in Madison Square Garden on Saturday? And it wasn't just Matt Kuchar and Brian Boyle, but Ottawa was playing, you know, tough in all three zones all night long.
What a great question, because, you know, a lot of people have been looking at this situation and saying, well, Matt Kuchar was this, or, you know, or he shouldn't have done that. It was too obvious what the Senators were doing. Wait a minute. What happened to Boyle, Trust, and Rupp in game two? They go out, kick the living daylights out of 170-pounders, and then when it's time to stand up, they just turtle. What? I couldn't figure that out. I Trust wouldn't fight Neil. I mean, Boyle finally fought him, but it had to be at the point where, you know, Boyle was in his home building and it would have embarrassed him to no end, and he just tried to hold on to Neil for dear life. I mean, it was totally confusing. We never saw Rupp involved in anything. Now, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe Tortorella said, okay, guys, we're going to play a very different game now. We're not going to be physical or aggressive. I doubt that that's what happened. So I'm very confused as to how the Rangers came out in game two and all of a sudden played the part of choir boy. I don't understand it at all.
What did you see at the end of that game two that allowed the Senators to tie this thing and then win this thing in overtime? I mean, you know, it seems like, you know, my concern about the Rangers coming into the playoffs was, again, we were going to see Lundqvist be an absolute, you know, the Great Wall of China between the pipes, that they're going to have trouble trying to give him that one goal that he needs for a little breathing room. How did you see the end of game two kind of playing out?
Well, Lundqvist, first of all, I don't think has looked terrific. I mean, even in the first period of game one, I thought he looked a little bit, I wouldn't say shaky, but not sort of like with the confidence that you normally see him with. And at the end of game two, I mean, all you got to say is, out of this game, Chris Neal scores a game-winning goal. And there's nobody that's going to knock him down.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you see the play, it's like, I mean, I hate to be cruel or barbaric about this, but, you know, he's got his knee right in the back of the neck of Girardi as he steps off his head and goes and celebrates with his teammates. You know, it's kind of like, wow, I mean, this is all surreal. There's so much going on in that right now that I'm just sitting back and I'm thinking, you know, should I get like really upset about this, or am I just loving it? So I don't know yet. I'll let you guys know later on.
That's,
I think,
great,
a lot of,
man,
people have that conflict, Denny, to be honest with you.
Hey,
we were talking about, before he came on, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you and I had a conversation actually on air, on Friday about Sidney Crosby. And I think you brought up a really salient point as well. And this may speak to the frustration that Crosby's going through. Sure, the Pittsburgh Penguins are frustrated as a team, but Crosby himself feels frustrated, I'm sure. And you brought up a great point on Hockey Central on Friday when you said he looks like he's out of shape. Can you expand on that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I you know, out of shape is you know, obviously not, it's not that the, it's not out of shape, period. What he is like everybody else. You cannot go without playing this game and have the sharpness, the quickness, the anticipation of what you're seeing guys who have played steady hockey for 8 months. And I think that better worded is, Sidney Crosby doesn't look to me like he is in playoff game shape. I mean, yes, he could probably go on the bike and, you know, he would basically do the VO testing and, you know, just go on a different stratosphere than most other athletes. I don't have a doubt in that. I think that, you know, physically, you know, the conditioning off ice is outstanding. He's that dedicated. Mm-hmm. But, boy, you cannot stay away from the game for that long and not have a serious trouble getting back to what you were when you played the game every day for 8 months. That's the bottom line. There's, you know, we've all been there as athletes. I think Jonathan Toews, you know, is going to take time to get back as well. He's not where he was. It's just a fact of life. And I think for Sidney Crosby, you pile that on to everything else that has come on him almost unwarranted. As I said, Laviolette just kind of had a game plan and they started attacking him, and the media did as well. And I think Sidney Crosby's sitting there going, wait a minute, what did I do to deserve all this? You know, and I think he's very frustrated, but the conditioning part is probably the biggest of frustration, because that's the best way we all answer the pundits. We go out and play and win.
Switching gears for a second, I know you've got a kind of a interesting history with the Florida Panthers as a franchise. Is there any part of you that takes some joy in seeing the resurrection of playoff hockey in Sunrise?
Well worded. Interesting. I'm wondering what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, you used to be the TV color guy, right? And I know that, you know, a decision was made for them to move off, right, and kind of go in a different direction. So I don't know if you hate the Panthers, and I don't know if you hate Michael Yormark. I don't know how it is. I wasn't going to ask you that, Denny. You're a guest for goodness sakes.
No, listen, I mean, you know, the bottom line is that the Panthers, the hockey department's always been outstanding. Let's put it this way. And I think that, you know, in spite of all the things that they have had to deal with over the years, every general manager having to deal with the business side, you know, I am very happy for them. Because some of the greatest moments that I felt in hockey, away from the game myself, away from actually playing, were in those years, in 96, when, you know, the team went nutty, and, you know, Doug McClain was behind the bench, and he was colorful and loved by the people in Florida, and, you know, we had a great time. And so I feel very good for them. When I see Stephen Weiss, you know, after giving away five teeth and, you know, maybe 400 or 500 stitches over the last several years, and, you know, this kid has really sort of been through the wars, almost 700 games in the NHL without playing one playoff game, I'm very happy for him, bottom line.
Do you think they have a shot against New Jersey, Denny? Or was that a cute little win? Yeah.
You know, I gave them two wins. I figured that, in my prediction, I figured that Florida, you know, they're the kind of team that has done so much that has been unexpected. I mean, I love Kevin Dineen, played against him, you know, understand where he's coming from. And I liked many of the players on that team that Dale Talon put together. So I think that, you know, they've got a bunch of guys that are not so different than that 96 team, you know, when the Panthers put together a group of hard-working cast-offs, as they used to call themselves, you know, because at that time they had the expansion draft, remember that? And these guys were all guys that were not wanted by their original franchises, so they all ended up in Florida, and they bonded together. And I don't know if they can get to that height. You know, that team went to the finals, but I sure see some similarities in this team, and I wish them luck. But I do think it's going to be a New Jersey series win in six.
Yeah, if they only had a John Van Beesbrook on this team, right?
Last one for me. That's a big difference, yeah.
Yeah. Last one for me, sir. We're not going to let you come on this program and not ask you about defensemen. I think I read somewhere that you put over Erik Karlsson as a Norris guy this year. What would your Norris ballot look like this year?
Okay, my Norris ballot this year would look like, and I kind of like this. I mean, I would go Karlsson, Weber, Pietrangelo.
Solid.
Yeah. And I love that. I like that kid Petrangelo. I mean, I like Chara and everything and the obvious one. Maybe I'm just so ticked off at what happened last year, you know, with thinking, how do you give a guy, even Lidstrom, how do you give him the Norris Trophy when he's a minus player? Mm. I mean, that's only happened 4 times in the history of the game. And it all happened way back in the 80s. So I just think that, you know, I'm looking at these new young guys, and I love what I see. And Carlson's been outstanding.
There's no doubt, and boy, have we ever seen him grow throughout the entire season. Danny, last one for me, and we'll let you get on with your afternoon. Further to a conversation that I had off air, what is the most fun you ever had in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
You're setting me up, aren't you?
No, I'm not. You can answer any way you choose.
we and no disrespect, guys, please, but it was playing against Vancouver.
Yeah.
And we won in 4 games, and for some reason, the television had us playing, I think it was like a Wednesday Sunday. And so we knew if we could win that Wednesday game, we had won 2 games at home, went to Vancouver, won the third Wednesday game, and then after that, it was just kind of relaxing in Vancouver, British Columbia, one of the most beautiful cities in the world, and we went salmon fishing and, you know, everything was real lighthearted. Of course, we ended up winning the 4th game for the sweep. But when you talk about fun, that was a fun win. I mean, I think the most rewarding win had to be the Oilers in 83 when we were not favored to win that Stanley Cup.
You knocked them off in 4, Danny. And they were the young rock and roll kids, Danny. I mean, these were the new kids on the block, and they're going to show you old men what the young man's game was all about. That, I can totally understand how that would be the most satisfying.
That was professionally most satisfying because of all those things you said. I mean, we had them in the rearview mirror, and they weren't getting off our tail, and we felt that if we let up, even for one shift, and I think I remember I can quote Al Arbor, if you let up for one shift against these guys, you may never get the momentum back. And it happened the following year in 84. They got it. They won that first game, and it was tough to, we weren't able to come back.
There it is. It's been said before, though, Danny, you guys taught them how to win, because what they saw, you guys had to go through to win that final Stanley Cup. The Oilers finally got it as they walked past your dressing room and saw everybody with a bag of ice on some part of their body. Said, oh, that's what it takes to win. As these guys were all walking out after having a shower, no limps, no bruises, no nothing. The Islanders have the cup, but they're limping, they're bruised, they have ice bags all over their body. You can say that your Islanders taught them how to win. Danny, thanks so much for stopping by, bud. We'll see you on the set tonight.
Always. Look forward to it, Jeff. Take care. Thanks very much.
Take care, man.
There is Denny Potvin. Salmon fishing in BC.
Potvin.
In between. Yeah.
You don't know how hard it is for a kid who grew up in New Jersey to say the name Potvin without using...
No, dude. Matt Carkner took all the heat off. It's no longer Potvin sucks anymore. It's Carkner. It's got to go to Carkner. It's all Carkner now. He's taking all the heat off Potvin, right? Right on this one?
As we transition to our next guest in a second, I want to mention that the Washington Capitals fans will be trolling Tim Thomas as expected tonight. A number of Capitals blogs have gotten together, and they have posters, placards, and masks ready for Game 3 in D.C. tonight with Barack Obama's face.
Oh, my God.
In preparation for Tim Thomas to be. Now, listen, when the Caps fans want to troll someone, they troll hard. It's kind of gone by the wayside, but when Sid and the Penguins used to come to town, you couldn't go 2 steps without seeing somebody with a pacifier in their mouth, a picture of a baby's crib, a Sidney Crosby diving team poster. Like, they know how to bring it when they're organized. So that the Thomas Obama White House snub thing comes back tonight. Again, the two things about this. First off, Thomas asked for this. He dodged the question before the playoffs. He put the thing back in the news. Now all of a sudden, Caps fans come into the game thinking it's going to get under his skin if they bring all the Obama stuff. Secondly, as a guy who lives in D.C., I'm fascinated by the idea of Barack Obama, the Democratic president of the United States, being used as a weapon of mockery at a D.C. home game. Because, you know, it's one thing to say, let's all get together and put pacifiers in our mouth to mock Sidney Crosby. It's another thing to get all the Republicans who can afford tickets down in the lower bowl at Verizon Center to say, here, put on this Obama mask.
Or start chanting. You wonder how quickly the Obama chants start tonight, Wish.
Yeah, I know.
Because you know they will. Let's get to our next guest.
We will chant for this man, Elliot. He is by far one of our favorite people in the hockey media. He writes the 30 Thoughts column every week, which everybody reads because it's the best thing around. He is, of course, with CBC Sports. He is Elliot Friedman joining us here at Merrick vs. Wyshynski. Hello, Elliot.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you guys doing this afternoon?
Doing well, sir. Doing
well.
Good,
yeah. Hey, I want to jump in with Vancouver.
Yeah.
And I kind of made the point, Friedge, before you came on, that when I look at Vancouver, specifically this season, and listen, I know it's only a three-game snapshot, but that's all we have from Vancouver in the postseason, I don't necessarily know that I see a team as much as I see a collection of hockey players. How do you see the Canucks right now?
Well, I think there's two things. First of all, and maybe one player shouldn't matter, but the Daniel Sedin thing has really hurt them. That's number one. I don't think you can forget that. But, you know, I look at them, and I'm even more convinced of this after watching their game last night, Jeff, and that is that all year long, Roberto Luongo has sort of been like their human shield, in the sense that he's the whipping boy. You know, the Canucks had all sorts of issues. They had a great year, considering they won the President's Trophy. Kessler didn't come back until later in the season. Every time something goes wrong there, it always seems to come down to the goaltending. Like, is it Luongo or is it Schneider? And last night, they got stripped away of the guy who takes the bullets for all of those other players. And they still lost. And they got 41 shots or so, but they didn't look like they were ever really in control of the game. And that was the thing that really stood out to me, was that aside from Henrik Sedin coming back and playing a three-minute shift after getting drilled by Dustin Brown, I didn't see a guy out there who was trying to turn the series around with a big play.
You know, I still think that Daniel snuck out in a 33 jersey during that shift and gave him at least a 30-second breather. Elliot, you mentioned Luongo. What did we see now that we've seen the switch made for Game 3 and most likely for Game 4? If the Canucks go out in 4, have we seen the Cam Ward-Martin Gerber moment passing of the torch, or are these guys going to come back next year and it's going to be Van Beesbrouck and Richter all over again?
No, I don't think they can come back with this next year. I think if you're Roberto Luongo, you can handle it once, okay? You can handle it last year in Chicago and say, okay, this was a one-time thing. I don't think if you're a number one goalie, you can handle it twice. Mm-hmm. And now the Canucks have to make a decision. And I wouldn't be surprised the way that Mike Gillis thinks there, and Lauren Henning and Lawrence Gilman, they've already made that choice. I think they know what they're going to do. And I think there could be different plans of action depending on what is available out there in the market. But I think they've pretty much said to themselves, if this happens, then we're going to do this. Or if this happens, then we're going to do this. I think it's all mapped out. But I don't think you can come back with both of them, because I think they've reached Price Halak stage. You just have to separate them. You can't keep them both together.
So let's say that Corey Schneider starts Game 4 and they lose, maybe Elliot in spectacular fashion, 5-0, let's say.
Yep.
What's the decision?
Well, I think it depends. If I'm in Vancouver, my decision is this, okay? Let's just say that happens. My question is, do you think you can bring Roberto Luongo back, okay? Or what do you think you're getting in a trade for Corey Schneider? I think that's really what it comes down to. You know, how do you think you look at your team right now? If they get wiped out in 4 games in the first round, you have a lot of questions about your organization and your players. And you have to sit down and really think about, okay, how did we go from one win from the Stanley Cup last year to a 4-game sweep in the first round? And the only thing that you are responsible is say, how do we get back there, and what's the best route that we can do to do it? If you think that means having Roberto Luongo in goal and trading Corey Schneider for necessary pieces, then you've got to go to Roberto Luongo and say, Roberto, You are a number one guy, and we're going to clear up the situation for you. You're never going to have to worry about this again. That's what you have to do there. But if you think that you have to find a way to unload Luongo and keep Schneider, you tell Roberto, you say, hey, look, it didn't work out. We're really sorry. We're going in this direction. Tell us where you want to go. Because if you're Luongo, you know, you have to present that kind of scenario, because the other option is, who know, what if the new CBA allows a different buyout or an amnesty? It's better for you to say, I'd rather go to this situation if it can be worked out than lose my contract altogether.
Interesting. You had a piece about Sidney Crosby off of Game 3 that I thought was very interesting, and I imagine that your sentiments about this are probably echoed in a lot of corners of the hockey world, including in the National Hockey League front offices. But the idea that Sidney Crosby puts himself in harm's way despite his medical history, and whether or not that is the right thing to do, almost essentially saying, Elliot, do the concussions he suffered, or the neck injury, or whatever the hell it was, does that take away his right to put himself in those situations, being that he is a marquee player?
Well, I think really, if you watch Scott Hartnell, I am 100% convinced that Scott Hartnell sees who he's tangling with and says, I better not hit this guy.
Yeah,
I am 100% convinced of that. And, you know, it's a tough place for Crosby. It really is, because he wants to be the captain. He wants to be a leader, and he sees how the ship is going down, and he wants to be a part of it. But as I was watching that melee, and you know what? Hey, it was entertaining. Nobody was turning their TV stations away from that. But I was thinking, you know, what happens if he gets punched here and he suffers another concussion? You have to look at the big picture. It's bad for the game, because that becomes your highlight that's played everywhere. Again, hockey is on CNN. It's on all the news networks. It's, you know, it's how does the sport let their most marketable and arguably best player put his career in jeopardy in this way? It's everything bad that can happen to the league. And that's the only thing I saw there watching it. And, you know, people were saying to me, well, it's his own fault. Look what he's doing out there. And you can't argue that, Greg. I mean, he was putting himself into a position where that could have happened. And I'm just saying, as a guy who loves hockey and wants to see the sport do well, it made me really queasy. And I just think that, you know, when the way the Penguins played at the end of that game, if I was a Philadelphia Flyer, I would have been looking for a pound of flesh. And the way that Hartnell acted, I think there's a lot of people in the league office breathing easier that Hartnell didn't take advantage of him when he could have.
What do you think of the impending suspensions for Asham and James Neal? Do you think both get dinged, Elliot?
Well, I thought, yeah, Asham, I mean,
he'll get
cross check
sure.
to the head, you have to get it. But I actually thought what Neal did in almost some ways was worse. Like, you know, Asham at least was coming to the defense of a teammate in theory, and I didn't like what he did, but Neal was going out there to hurt people. And, you know, if you thought Nathan Horton on getting hit by Aaron Rome was bad last year, I thought what Neal did to Sean Couturier was worse. And I could not believe it when I saw Couturier on the ice after that.
Yeah. What do you think overall the NHL is thinking about with regard to the officiating in these playoffs? I mean, is it just that the officials are doing everything they can to try to keep the peace and guys are just still acting up, or do you think there needs to be some major reevaluation about how they go about doing this?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing, Greg. I'm really torn on this now. You know, I couldn't tear myself away from the television all weekend. Like, there were times I wanted a break from hockey, just go for a walk or something like that. I couldn't. I mean, it was so entertaining. And, you know, here's my question about this all weekend. There's some people who don't like this. I don't think at the top of the league level they like what happened this weekend. I don't think that, you know, certain members of the media don't like what happened this weekend. But here's my question. What if your, watch all the TV ratings come out today and tomorrow. What if your fans loved it? And I'll tell you this, I think a lot of the players like it. They want the headshots out, but they love the hard games and they love the competition of it. And if you're a fan and you're paying how much money or whatever it is for two tickets or your jersey or whatever, you're going out there and you're looking at a lot of these games and saying, it's nice to see that our players care. Like that Philly building, was there anybody sitting for the third period yesterday?
No, and I think I think Philly fans and Flyers players are going to add that game to their porn collection. I think that there is going to be such intense love for what happened to that game, the unraveling of the Pittsburgh Penguins. There's not a single person in Philly that thinks that that game was a travesty.
Well, do you remember a few years ago, Greg, when Ottawa and Philly had their big brawl? They replayed the game a couple days later, and it got better numbers.
Yeah.
And the
Islanders wanted to do the same with the Pittsburgh game, and I think they got the league said no at the last second, didn't they?
Right.
They wanted to do a viewing party, was what it was.
Yeah.
Right. But that's my question here. Like, what? And I'm actually going to write this today. What if this is what the fans want?
I think it is, and the early returns are already coming in now. We're seeing that NBC is projecting upwards for the Pittsburgh-Philadelphia game. I'm sure the numbers are going to be hot for Hockey Night. The numbers are going to be hot for TSN, for the games here in Canada. Elliot, as much as some in the NHL may say that we don't want this game to be about that, the people that actually have the nerve to buy the tickets and subscribe to the Center Ice Package or Game Center Live or whatever, my feeling is that they do, Friege.
And what happens if you attract more, if these are the people and this is what they want with their game, then how do you take it away? I mean, I think it's a really tough, because I think some of the headshots this weekend were awful, and you can't have that with what we know about concussions. But the games were entertaining, they were competitive, they were fierce and hard fought, which is what we all like during the playoffs. And if you're getting record TV numbers from that, how do you say no in a business?
You can't, but at the same time, I think you have to treat it like sometimes they treat fighting, which is you have to demonize it, but at the same time know that it's essential to the popularity of your sport. So I have no problem with the NHL coming out, giving out suspensions, saying we don't condone this stuff, because they have to.
Yeah.
Because the casual sports fan and ESPN here in the States is going to look at this thing. They're going to see the Weber thing. They're going to see the Flyers-Penguins thing. They're going to say, it's the barbarous NHL again. So the NHL has to come out and be the Puritan in this situation while at the same time giving a winking acknowledgement that the fan base loves it.
Yeah, and I think that's probably where you are, Greg. But I just look at this and say, the other thing too, I'm convinced now is the teams in a lot of cases, would rather deal with it themselves because they don't trust the supplementary discipline.
Hmm.
And I think that's all Boston. I look at Boston the last couple of years, and I've talked about it with Bruins before. That they felt that after Cook, the hit got no penalty, and Bergeron got hit and missed a year, and it was only two games, they decided that we can't depend on the league; we have to depend on ourselves. And I wonder if that's where we're going again.
Friege, last one for me. We'll let you get on with your day. Your thoughts on the Ottawa Senators, and we saw the Pittsburgh Penguins react violently to their situation, which is more about frustration than inspiration. But quite the opposite is true of the Ottawa Senators, and that violence was used as inspiration to win a game two. What did you make of the Sens on the weekend?
Well, I think that you can't be pushed around in this league. I was listening to Nick Kiprios, your guy's colleague, today and on the weekend, and I do agree that the NHL, like a lot of life, is about intimidation. I know people don't like hearing that, but it's true. You have to be able to intimidate your opponent to win in this league. There is no question in my mind. And to me, the Ottawa Senators in Game 1, they looked intimidated. Everybody's talking about, Matt Carkner beat up a defenseless opponent in Brian Boyle. I understand that to a point. But if I'm the Ottawa Senators, I'm saying, wait a sec. What did he do to Erik Karlsson in game number one? Didn't look to me like Erik Karlsson wanted to fight him. You can't let that happen to your team. If it's not going to be policed and Boyle's not going to be punished for it, you do have to say, look, we're not going into your building, a tough building to play in, and allowing you to do that to our best player. And, Cassie and the other guys told me when the Senators came off the ice on Saturday night, it was like they just won the Stanley Cup. Because they'd gone into a tough building, they'd stood up for themselves, they killed off Carkner's major, they lost Alfredson, and they still found a way to win that game. When you stand up for yourself on the road especially, there's nothing, I believe, that puts together a team tighter than that. On the road, to do that, you believe in yourself.
finally, real quick, we have an insider on the line, so I have to ask you an insider question. What's your best guess? What's your best guess for Montreal GM and coach?
I think it still depends on what Patrick Waugh wants to do.
Interesting. Okay.
I think that the fact that Sir Savard looks like he's going to be part of the operation is interesting, and I don't think they can do this without. I don't think they can do this without at least approaching him and talking to him about it. They can't not talk to him. And the second thing is, guys who are a lot smarter than me, Greg, and there are a lot of them, believe that there will be candidates for this job after teams get knocked out of the playoffs that will surprise us.
Interesting. Elliot Friedman, you are a gentleman and a scholar. If you don't read Elliot every week, there's something wrong with you.
Please
CBC
do, because
Sports
I'd like
own Elliot
to stay
Friedman.
Employed.
I think you got that covered, Friege. Everyone's reading 30 Thoughts. Keep up the good work, bud.
All right, guys. Keep up the great podcast. Speak to you later.
Thanks, man.
Elliot Friedman. One of those potential clients for the Montreal Canadiens could be Alain Vigneault, by the way. Although I don't know if that would be like necessarily a big surprise. Like, would that shock
you? Do you think he gets cover that, based on the Sedin injury, based on the fact that they're going to do the little goalie changeover, as Elliot mentioned? Do you think he gets cover for 1 year?
I don't think so. Don't forget, he wasn't Mike Gillis' guy. Mike Gillis inherited Alain Vigneault. Remember there was that awkward moment where, they were doing some type of meeting in Las Vegas, and it was very, I don't remember if Alain Vigneault actually ended up going, but it sort of spoke to the idea that, you know, this isn't Mike Gillis' guy, but he's going to give him a shot and see what comes out of it. Like, let's not forget, yeah, this wasn't Mike Gillis' selection. This is another general manager. Mm-hmm. So I don't think so.
We're up against it because both Merrick and I have to boogie, and I know everybody over the weekend was so kind in tweeting us and emailing us about doing a 5-hour show today, and we could. I mean, we could talk about what happened this weekend for 5 hours. It was a remarkable weekend in the National Hockey League. The question of the day was about the injury culture. You guys have sent in some really thoughtful answers, and what I'll do is I'll go and put them together in a post on Puck Daddy because we can't get to everybody, and people have said some really interesting stuff. This is from Dan Menezes, which I'm sure I'm killing. Personally, I don't mind the suspend of the injury ideal in theory, especially for what would amount to punitive damages. Basically, I would suspend to intent but punish further to injury if anything serious comes out of it. And again, to me, that's the Neil thing, as Elliot said. I mean, the Neil thing is intent. He was headhunting, and nobody got hurt, but he was headhunting. That to me is always, listen, concussions on accidental plays, whatever, it's going to happen forever, right? But a play like that where he's clearly trying to take out the guy who, the two guys who had hat tricks in game two, he's going after him. So you got to take care of that. And I hope that the league does that. You'll probably know by the time you read this, but I hope the league does that.
We shall see. Let's see. From Claddo, if Couturier just gets up, was Neil's hit any cleaner, any less likely to cause injury? No. Druten Heacock says, it's not right. Some things should be a suspension, injury or not, i.e. Weber. Making an injury the focus is a bad idea. I think it has to be part of it, though. I really do. I don't know that it's the biggest criteria, but I think it does have to be a criteria when you're.
I think it has to be part of the punishment. I think the previous emailer had it right. It needs to be part of the punishment. But the idea that a suspension doesn't come down for Shea Weber because Henrik Zetterberg wasn't injured is insane. It's insane. He grabbed the guy's head and slammed it into the glass, and it's insane because it's a terrible way to dole out punishment, and it's insane because, as we talked about in the show before, it's begging these guys to embellish.
Okay.
It's begging these guys to play politics.
If you're doing intent, though, in game two, when Henrik Zetterberg tried to ram Shea Weber's head into the glass, although he couldn't because, let's face it, Shea Weber's a bull, what was the intent there?
I never saw that play because I was looking for it.
Dude, it was a funny play. It was a funny play. We can send you. Like, we got a clip that's sports. I'll send it to you tonight if you want. It was one of those moments where you kind of laughed. You're like, oh, yeah, dude, that's hilarious. But I mean, if you just want to do intent, he's trying to take his head and throw it into the glass the same way that Shea Weber did.
But there's a difference between like Minority Report kind of shit where it's like, what would he have done? Pre-crime kind of thing, and what a guy like Weber. Like, Weber actually went to punch him, missed, and slammed his head in the glass. Neil went and jumped in into Couturier and then went to try to take off Giroux's head. I mean, I get what you're saying of the woulda, coulda thing, because I'm like that too, but I think that there is a line to be drawn. Dave in Jacksonville takes umbrage with the Karkner conversation. Understand your position on defenseless but not defending one's self-argument regarding Boyle, but the absurd logic conclusion in your line of thought is that if Rupp or Bickle were to go up to Carlson and ask him to fight, which he would rightfully refuse because he's not a fighter or out of his weight class, Rupp or Bickle would then be justified in pummeling him.
That's
After all,
true.
It's because of Carlson that Boyle was attacked, ergo you have the defending a teammate justification. Of course, since the game is in Canada, the fans would probably call the police and demand an assault charge be filed.
They jam up the 911 line.
Oh, poor Montreal.
Okay, that's funny. Hey, you know what? We went an entire podcast without talking about Ryan Kesler putting on the Speedos last night.
Oh, God. Oh, God. And all series.
I know.
Kesler. I'm a huge Kesler
so
fan.
So do I.
He's a proud American. But damn it, he's making it hard. He's making it as hard as Fleury is for me to back him with this. I mean, he has been egregiously diving this series.
I know. It's real bad. It's there. And that's why. And as a teammate, like, don't think for, and everyone's going to stand up for him and when the cameras are on and all that, but don't think for a second that as a teammate, you look at that and say, yeah, way to go and try to draw that penalty.
Oh,
you
really?
Just kinda make, you just kind of make
so?
Yourself.
You don't think Burrows is on the bench going, actually, Ryan, I liked your form. I give you about an 8.8, but you gotta definitely work on your footwork.
Okay, there are two. Alex Burrows and Maxime Lapierre. Okay, so outside of those two guys. Hey, you know what? You know who you gotta hand it to though? I'll tell you what, man. If there were, and of course this is obvious because he's such a high talent, but I just love the way he spoke about it afterwards. You know, after Henrik Sedin got absolutely rocked by Dustin Brown, and to Elliot's point, came out and had a really strong 3-minute shift. The guy was fantastic. And he did not come off that entire power play.
Yeah.
Henrik Sedin, not once did he whine, complain, or anything about the hit. Nope, I was just winded. It was okay. Fine hit. Let's play on.
Yeah.
God, I love that from Henrik Sedin last night. More Henrik Sedin's on that obvious statement, but more with that spirit or that mentality or that vibe, and the Vancouver Canucks instantly become a better team.
Yeah, I wonder if he was Thelma or Louise when he was talking about that hit. Swedes are pussies.
Stupid crap.
All right, everybody, that's the show for today. Jam-packed, filled to the gills. We both have to boogie. We'll talk about all of the suspensions that will come down today on tomorrow's podcast. I am Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet tonight on Hockey Central with Danny Potvin and John Shannon, 11 o'clock Eastern and 1 a.m. as well. So another late night. For yours truly.
And I will be in the hizzy for the Boston Bruins and the Washington Capitals game 3 tonight. Taking my Obama mask.
There you go.
Box and wearing it proud. I might have an Obama mask for the first half of the game, and then I'll wear a Mitt Romney mask for the rest of the time. Just to even the score. You know, I don't want to be a partisan hack here or anything. So
No, of course. That's fair and balanced. You always wear a little bit of a mitten. I've always thought it'd be that way.
Thank you to Danny Potvin for joining us and giving us his Norris ballot and making me explain why he might hate the Florida Panthers. Thank you to Elliot Friedman for hopping on and giving us that Friedman-esque knowledge that we like so bad in 30 Thoughts every week. More fun and merriment for the rest of the week. Thank you guys again for listening.
How about Danny Potvin, though, with maybe the line of the entire playoffs? Am I supposed to get upset about all this, or do I love it? He just synthesized the entire playoffs in one line for everybody, right?
Well, let me put an appendix on that, actually.
Okay.
Or am I supposed to get upset about it because I love it?
Yeah.
It's just the
you
truth,
know,
man. It's,
you know.
It's as much about being a hockey fan as anything, man, is throwing your hands up. It's like we talked about last week. It's gone from being in the cheap seats going, come on, ref, that was a dive, to being at home being like, come on, Brendan Shanahan, that was a 7-game suspension. It's the same thing, only it's all on steroids because we have Twitter now. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we'll be back for tomorrow with more merriment. Thanks to Elena behind the glass, as always, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.